Hello, good afternoon. Appreciate you coming to a non-tech discussion. Who's excited about the Biden versus Trump presidential race?
Nobody.
Let's start with how we got here. Mike Murphy on the far end.
Yes.
Legendary GOP strategist. Just ask him, he'll tell you. Who worked for Romney, McCain, Jeb, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of Republicans ran in the primaries this year, but nobody got very far. Why is Nikki Haley still in the race, and how did Trump clean everyone's clock?
Well, Trump sits atop the party, for good or bad. I'm an anti-Trump Republican, so I'm not excited about it. And so he was always hanging on to 60% of the vote. And in a multi-way, that's the end. Nikki won the preseason, and now she's basically performing the most interesting dead cat bounce in the history of politics. I'm enjoying it, because anything that's bad for Trump, I enjoy. It's not so good for Nikki. It is technically very hard for her to get any delegates. Now, people are telling her, particularly donor types who are kind of the most dangerous amateurs in politics, that stay in. You don't know what'll happen. You know, an extra forkful of meatloaf, it could go bad. Stay in till the convention. The problem is, if Trump were to drop out, most of the party machinery would go somewhere else. The Nikki constituency now is small due to the party and the mechanism of who's in the grassroots. So if she wants to run again, she should have gotten out 2 weeks ago, gone quiet, and reappeared after the next Trump disaster and make the case, I'm the one who told you so, let's try again, and she'd be pretty formidable. But she's spoiling that by staying in. But again, I'm glad she is, because it is providing criticism of Trump, peeling off just enough Republicans to perhaps give President Biden, who's in deep trouble politically, some of the things he'll need to survive the reelection.
So, Bob, you work for dozens of Democratic senators, members of Congress, a lot of presidential campaigns. The two nominees went down to Texas today, both to do events at the border. How do you think that issue plays? Is it going to be different than what it was in the past, which was sort of a pro-Republican issue?
On the natural, it's a pro-Republican issue. And you could talk about the stagecraft of those visits today and how it went. Biden does have one advantage here. He can issue a whole series of executive orders that will implement at least a lot of what was in that compromise bill that Donald Trump killed. I love the politics we're in today. If you said this, you know, 30 years ago, you would have been in deep trouble. You got to kill that thing because it's going to solve the problem and I won't have the issue, which is basically what he said publicly and communicated to people in Congress. The other thing about it, I would say, is we went through 2018, the caravans are coming. 2020, the caravans are coming. 2022, the caravans are coming. I think it's an important issue, very important to Trump's base, important to some swing voters, but it wasn't decisive in any of those elections.
Amy, you're a master pollster working for lots of Democrats and some businesses, and this year for Adam Schiff. How come Joe Biden isn't getting the credit for the recovery of the economy the way that presidents typically do?
For starters, I think, you know, the era of presidents getting credit for things outside of their partisans is largely over. But I think the other issue is, for a lot of voters, and especially what we see with swing voters, is they disproportionately don't feel like the economy is recovering. You know, we did this deep dive qualitative in the fall, and we asked people, you know, how should we measure economic growth? What is a good economy means? And we heard things like, in a good economy, you can go from poverty to middle class. In a good economy, you can work one full-time job and pay the bills without working overtime or without having a second income or without going into debt. And we're nowhere near that for most voters. And so, I think when politicians, this is one of the struggles Biden is having now, to talk about a recovering economy when a big chunk of voters do not feel like we are recovering.
And Mike, how much do you think Biden's age plays into some of the challenges that Biden is facing?
Huh? Couldn't hear you. No. Yeah, enormous. I feel bad for him. When you've got something like that, it's like your president, you wake up in the morning and the staff comes running in, Mr. President, we've cured cancer. And then they all look at you and scream, my God, you've grown antlers. So you go down to do the press conference, I've cured cancer. And the media is just like, what about the antlers? It's in the way. And what has happened to President Biden, who I am sympathetic to, but politics is a tough business, is the bad perceptions on the economy. Remember, perceptions are reality in our business. And when you deal with inflation, the perception is the truck payment and the grocery bill every week, same stuff, more money, plus age compounds to make it even bigger. Which is not only is the economy not right, he's clearly doesn't have the faculties to control it, unfair or not. So it's kind of doubled down and put him in a real box. I'll just sum up by saying we have invented something this year. We're going to have the first quantum election where the electorate is in two states at once. A majority wants to fire Joe Biden and a majority can't stand Donald Trump. And boy, they're going to be mad when they find out it's a pretty much a two-question outcome. Maybe there'd be third-party silliness, but fundamentally, they're going to be trapped in that, and they're going to have to make a choice and pick one state to be in.
And Bob, not disconnected from that economic discontent, a lot of younger Democrats and voters of color have drifted from the Democratic Party, despite Biden's accomplishments on climate and student debt and infrastructure and a whole range of other issues. What can he do in the campaign to put the coalition back together?
Well, you're going to have to reach out to them. You're going to have to make a major effort to communicate with them. I think the drift of people of color is exaggerated. I think it primarily exists among African-American men, where Trump got, I think, 12% of the vote in 2020. And that's where I think about where he is right now. But look, we are, and I'm going to pick up on something both of you said, we are in an era of negative partisanship. What matters is not who you like, but who you don't like. That drives vote more than anything else. It's the idea that you would have a JFK, who on the day he was shot when his legislative program was stuck in Congress, had a 60% job approval rating and a 72% rating outside the South, that's over. We are so polarized that even if you got over some of the economic stuff Amy was talking about, people probably wouldn't give him credit. It's why you keep seeing, I think, Trump and a lot of Republicans saying, you know, the price of gas is going up. It's going up and up and up and up. It's not. But it doesn't matter because the people they're talking to believe them. We now have lost any sense of common knowledge or a common fact base for debating in this society.
So the vibes matter more than the facts.
Well, Mike is fond of saying, and I give him credit for this line, that what's happened is our politics is kind of like a television show, reality TV show, because the stakes may be enormously high, but people don't quite realize that. And this is reinforced by the mainstream press, which focuses on issues like age. Look, Biden has spinal arthritis. So that's why he walks in a very stiff way. His stutter from his childhood has reasserted itself, and that's why when he's giving a speech, especially off a prompter and he's reading words, he'll go, "Ladies and gentlemen," or "Folks, let me repeat that," because it's his safety valve for not stuttering. But that's what gets so much attention, and a lot of the substantive stuff, as Mike suggests, doesn't. So it's like, you know, now look, Trump's almost Biden's age, and he forgot his wife's name the other day, and he's now giving these speeches where you can't follow him anymore. I mean, they just wind around and around and around.
I mean, that's not new.
Yeah, well, it's new in the sense that it used to be. They always wound around, but what's new is that I can't sometimes connect one thought to the other. How did he get from there to there?
Amy, is it the polarization that Bob was talking about that is responsible for Trump being so competitive, maybe leading the presidential race despite the 91 indictments and overturning Roe v. Wade and, you know, saying kind of batshit stuff every day?
It's certainly a big part of it. You've got 42% just baked in. But you do in some of these swing states, you have RFK polling in the double digits.
And who does that help?
Slightly more Trump than Biden. Not entirely more, but certainly slightly more. You also have the fact that, and Mike alluded to this, people have not reckoned with the fact that Biden and Trump are the guys. Like, you ask people, and they 50% do not believe that. And I think, you know, we reckon with Biden as president every day. People have not fully reckoned with what another Trump term might look like.
So when half the country wakes up and recognizes that actually this is the choice, how do you think it's going to change the dynamics of the race?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be an overnight thing. I think it is going to be, I actually think it's going to be a very transactional election. For as high as we all know the stakes are, I think a lot of this comes down to who is going to make it easier for me to go, you know, into the middle class? Who is going to make it so that, you know, even if gas is going down, eggs are going up? Who's going to stop all the seesawing of prices? And I think it's going to be very transactional.
Mike, as everyone here knows, tech is moving, you know, faster than the speed of light. And AI in particular has been a major theme at the conference, driving a transformation across our society, good and bad. What are the new challenges these two octogenarian candidates need to reckon with in this modern tech and media environment?
Well, I don't know if they have to reckon with it that much.
Their teams.
Their teams will. I mean, Trump will be put out a talkie, you know, meaning a tweet or something. It won't be them. The problem we have is, and I'm not a techophobe, I'm pro-tech. The history of technology is improving human lives, not hurting them. But we're biological animals, and if you it surprised me with a really good high definition hologram of a Bengal tiger right now, my brain will be thinking, wow, they've gotten really good at those holograms, while I jump over the chair and try to get Bob in front of the tiger to buy me 5 seconds to get to the parking lot. So we're going to have deep fakes everywhere, which is a problem, because it's the old political scientist George Lakoff, don't think of an elephant. You're thinking of an elephant. So you see the deep fake of 10 years ago, the grainy security footage in an elevator of Joe Biden, like, throwing a drink on his son. And that's all a complete fabricated lie. People are going to retain it subconsciously. Yeah. So we're starting to kind of hack biology here, which is very dangerous stuff. Eventually, the AI will be good at curating some of this content so people can build screens of truth and fact. But we're kind of in a transition place now. And it's going to be a wild world out there for political communications. The other problem is with digital media, you can hide a lot of stuff you can't hide on television, which is another problem. It's hard to police.
So with our polarization and our new fractured media environment and people looking for affirmation rather than information, how can we police this? Because, you know, you could have a deep fake go around the world and right, half the country will believe it and half won't.
That's critical, by the way, because no matter what safeguards you build in, and even if things get better at curating this stuff, and no matter how many fact checkers you have, if you want to believe that Biden threw a drink on his son, you're going to believe it. And if you want to believe that, I don't know, I was going to make up something preposterous about Trump, but most of it's true. but if you want to believe that, you're going to believe it. Yeah. So it's very, very hard to police this right now.
Part of the problem is the equation now is I'm right, you're evil on both sides. And if the other side's evil, there are no rules. You're a hero. You can do anything. Lock her up. Storm the Capitol. We're saving democracy. Any good movie villain thinks often they're doing the right thing. So that frees people up to do their worst.
And everybody who has ever tried to undermine democracy claims that what they're really doing is saving democracy.
But I think there's a group that's getting left out of this conversation. And I'm not a big believer in this huge middle that really would swing either way in our moderates. The group that we're missing is the group that the pox on both your houses. I don't believe anything I see, and I'm not very interested in this election. And I actually think they're going to go a long way to determining what happens in terms of who shows up and who doesn't.
As Mike was saying, the double haters.
Yep.
And the double haters broke heavily for Biden in 20,
right,
and heavily against Hillary at the end after the Comey letter, yep, in 16.
But it's not just who do they hate less. It's who could they bother to show up for.
Yeah,
right.
But
and
you
so
have
what
a
do you
risk
think
of a steam valve. You know, hey, we're going to do the white wine and cheese party and all wear halos and have 11% of the vote because we can't vote for Trump, but I'm tired of Joe Biden. And then Biden needs voters who hate him to be there in the end.
But Biden has to pull off a Truman. Truman, in 1948, literally every pundit thought he was going to lose. Things were so bad that they couldn't keep the train going. They ran out of money, and they had to go to some wealthy guy who said, look, he's not going to win, but I'll give you, I think it was $10,000 then, so that he can keep the train going across the country on the whistle stop. He had a splinter party to the right of him, the Dixiecrats with Strom Thurmond, a splinter party to the left of them. They called themselves progressives. I would call them the fellow travelers with Henry Wallace. And everybody wrote him off. Dewey was basically elected, as the Chicago Tribune proclaimed, and Truman famously held the paper up. He's going to have to do that. And I suspect that what we're going to see is one of the meanest, nastiest campaigns we have ever seen. Even putting aside the deep fakes and the lies, you know, the Biden campaign is going to take the stuff that the Heritage Foundation is now developing for Trump, like invoke the Insurrection Act on day one, send troops into American cities, round up anybody who doesn't look quite like us and put them in a camp and figure out whether they're an illegal immigrant, and don't give them much process at all before you throw them out of the country. I mean, there's going to be a drumbeat of stuff. They're going to pick the most vulnerable things in the material Heritage is working on, and you're going to hear about that. And on the other side, you're going to hear that Biden opened up the border. The truth is, we had lots of problems with the borders before Biden came along, and it's just going to be a dirty, nasty campaign.
Mike.
I mean, look at this impeachment. This impeachment inquiry, it's nuts. It turns out the principal witness was a double agent acting on behalf of Russia, and he made a bunch of stuff up. And they're
still not convinced, Bob. I think they're...
His name was Smirnoff. I always trust a guy
Jordan.
Named Smirnoff.
Yeah. I want to see all the
facts
here.
Mike, when you look ahead, and then I'll get Amy, your view on this too, to the major moments of this race coming up, the convention, the debates, you know, the sort of the traditional markers of a general election. How do these candidates need to do that differently to actually break through in this new tech and media environment?
Well, the big events aren't as big as they used to be, because with in the digital world, when I started out, there'd be a campaign manager with a lockbox full of stamps. Now we have free stamps, which is the greatest thing in the world for kooks. It's also democratized politics a little bit. Big donors aren't as important, for good or bad. So the big events aren't as important, but they're still rallying points. So the debate, if there are debates, right now neither are acting like they like them. But I guarantee you in October, somebody's going to be winning by a little, and somebody's going to be losing. And whoever's losing is going to want to debate. So my guess is there will be a big moment there. The conventions are rapidly becoming less important. That said, there's a big speech you give, and that'll be a moment for Biden. And it'll be a little unfair. Most of the time a president has to give a speech is judged on the message, essentially. Biden has that problem. He has to change the messaging across his campaign, in my view. But that speech will be a defining moment for most people to start the campaign. For us, it starts now. For them, it starts in this late summer convention time. And then finally, his performance will be watched. Because he's now, it's kind of like Dan Quayle after Potato. Everything he does is judged on the ruler of, is he a moron or not? Because that has been set artificially. I know Dan
Quayle. That's because the school kid who's spelling a potato he corrected said, my God, the vice president is a moron.
Wasn't a moron. Don't make me break out the Kennedy jokes, Bob. So the bottom line is Biden's going to have kind of an unfair measurement based on his age. And they're going to have to work on that. They're also going to have to figure out how to present him. It's television. Today he was at the border. I come out of the old Reagan school, control the picture. Put Biden in a Jeep with a machine gun on it like Patton and drive around. Instead, they have him walking like Mr. Magoo. Have you seen the footage? It kills him, his own guys. So they've got to fix this stuff, or TV will be his problem, and those big events are about television.
And speaking of big events and TV, he's got the State of the Union. I think
speaking
next
of that,
week,
I do not think they should put him in a tank with a machine gun.
I don't know. Rolling through Congress, that might be very popular. So the State of the Union, I believe, is next week. In terms of Biden's message, in terms of sort of setting the table for the election, what do you think he can say or do that would actually move the needle?
At the State of the Union, I think very little, because there's just no one is tuning in at this point who does not already have
a view.
I will say, you know, I disagree a little. No, I shouldn't say I disagree. Yes, there is going to be a lot of nastiness, and it is going to be a drumbeat, and it is going to be exhausting. I also think you will see from the Biden side, he needs to run some positive. You know, Trump's issue, his strength, his weakness, is that we know everything about him. And so it's no one's updating their priors. You know, we're not learning new information. Biden's weakness is people still don't know that much about him. You know, I did work in 2020 for the Super PAC. I've done work since. And one of the remarkable things we've always seen is positive does a lot more than negative. And it's such a bizarre thing for, you know, a presidential campaign for outside groups to be running positive. But that's what they've been doing, you know, since the beginning. And I think he has his positive message to work on.
And what do you think is his greatest strength and his greatest liability?
I mean, I think it does get to that idea that, you know, on both of those cases, that people don't know as much about him as you would think for a guy who's been in office for 4 years, who's been in politics for forever. So the downside of that is if you don't know enough, you fill in the blanks with what's out there. And what's out there is, you know, throwing cups in the elevator, is the stumbles, is the more than stumbles, you know, those blanks get filled in, you know, because putting your head down and working every day, slow, occasionally steady progress, like it's not exciting. It's not getting attention. But that's also a strength because he does have room to grow. Voters do have things they can learn about him. There's nothing new we're learning about Trump.
And Bob, to that point, I'm going to ask you to kind of commit an unnatural act here and assess him as a political animal. What do you think is his greatest strength and his greatest liability as a candidate?
His greatest, Trump?
Trump.
Trump's greatest liability is himself. He can't get out of the way. I mean, he wrapped up the Republican nomination, and he should have tempered his tone a bit. And instead, he viciously went after Nikki Haley the other day. It was like, you know, literally beating up a dead horse. I mean, she's gone in this race. When she withdraws, I don't know. His greatest strength is that he's got about a hardcore 40 to 43% of people, and they're not moving. It doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter if he gets convicted in some criminal trial. It doesn't matter if they discover, as we apparently are discovering today, that he doesn't have all that much money. That's basically what he just told the courts. He can't come up with the money to post the bond for the two civil suits he's lost. I'd say one last thing. I think I totally agree with Mike about big events, especially convention speeches. Look, Gore moved about 18 points in 47 minutes in 2000. He was about 13 points behind Bush, and you know, the Saturday after the convention, he was about 5 points ahead. I don't think he can do that anymore. I mean, the electorate just isn't flexible in that way. And the people who tend to watch the acceptance speech now are going to be the partisans who want to see their guy up there talking. Now, Biden has won, and people may watch Biden because they may be curious about how he's going to do. And he has one advantage. And it's all the stuff we're talking about as a problem for him. He benefits from low expectations. And he has the capacity, at times, I've seen it, to rise and to really defy those expectations. And that's what they're going to try and do.
One cartwheel and he's president.
We have 1 minute left. Chris Matthews had this great part of his talk show called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. So very quickly, like 20 seconds each, tell the audience something they don't know about this year's presidential race, starting with Murphy.
Oh, boy. It's really about 700,000 people in five states. It's all levered to that. Watch Michigan and Georgia. Win them both, you're probably president.
Shrummy?
I think people underestimate Biden. I think he was underestimated in 2020. I think he's underestimated now. He was written off totally. Murphy bet me that he wouldn't make it to Iowa. And you still haven't paid, by the way. And And they had a theory of the case, and they stuck to the theory of the case. And my former partner, Mike Donilon, is probably one of the two or three most influential people in the Biden enterprise. And they're going to stick to their theory of the case.
Amy, clean us up here.
I'm going to go in a totally different direction to talk about, building on Mike's though a little, look at abortion ballots. They're in Arizona. They're probably in Arizona, in Nevada. I think like a lot of Democrats, I have given up on Florida, but there's one there too. And we have seen, like Mike said, these are small margins we're talking about. And we've seen the power of these abortion ballots to get new registrants, to get people to the polls that don't normally go in certain types of elections. And I think it could be a difference maker in some of these states.
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.